Well, hello, friends. It's been some time, hasn't it? Now, if you haven't been following us on our social media, then you're probably not aware that we are in between seasons currently. We are hard at work on season 2 of the Ghostlight Theater. And if you would like to remedy this situation from ever, ever occurring again, then simply look in the show notes and follow us on all of our social media. With all that being said, welcome back inside our dimly lit little theater of the mind. Oh, and we have a very special bonus episode planned for you all tonight, folks. You see, we are well aware that this month is Black History Month. And we are also aware that within the podcasting and horror community, it is Women in Horror Month as well, with February being the second month in this bright, shiny new year. We thought it would only be fitting to feature 2 Black authors on this special bonus episode. First, we have the story, Pew Pew. I could have been a Foley artist in another afterlife, I know. Regardless, Pew Pew is the first in a trilogy of horror, written by Anya Loren Wilson. Now, for just a little background on our first author. Wilson is a member of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. She hails from the coast and whose love of speculative fiction propels her through her everyday life. She writes poetry, nonfiction, in-game stories, and fiction. Anya is an associate editor and copy editor for the award-winning magazine Strange Horizons and the horror podcast Nightlight. A member of the Neo Pro Codex Writers Group and a writer for Ollie Arts, Discover Pods, and Thurston Talk. She is an Otherwise Fellowship honorable mention for 2019, and her work appears in Arsenica, Terraform, and more. Currently, she is writing and editing for herself and others while working on the endless submission grind for her short and long works. You can follow her on Instagram at FreakyHowl, that is FreakyHowl, or on her website, AnyaLWilson.com, which we will include those links in the show notes for you folks. And believe me, once you've heard this first story, you will want to see this narrative through to its conclusion. And because we spirits here in the Ghostlight Theater treasure you, good listeners, so much, we will include those links in the show notes as well. And now, without any further ado, performed by yours truly, your host, Lucius W. Griot, the Ghostlight Theater proudly presents
Pew Pew.
D had stopped keeping track of who invited who weeks ago. The only thing that mattered to him was that one of them accepted it, night after night. In the end, it was what broke them. In the aftermath, it's all that kept them together. Kept D together. Whether it was Starshine or Soldier's Call, D and Mark had a recurring date to play through the game worlds of their youth. But online...
Let's do something new tonight,
Mark said. His voice came through static over the line. D typed back. New like what? The mic on D's headphones worked, but it was enough just to hear Mark's voice. Allowing him to hear the sadness in his voice would be too much.
I found this game earlier while digging around at work. Marvel's Madness.
I haven't heard of it.
It's one of those old-school horror co-op games. We have to survive a night in an insane asylum and find out what lurks in its haunted halls. I played a little of it earlier, but I died before making it past level 1.
Go to bed. Scrolled across Dee's wristwatch. Work was in less than 12 hours. Horror games like that one usually pulled them through the night. I can't stay up all night with you, you know.
Just play the fucking game,
Mark said. So they did. The cobweb hallway title screen popped up on D's computer display. He kept his desk and setup close enough to his bed that he could crawl under the covers and play from there if things ran too late. Which that night, they were. Mark selected his character before making a joke.
Go on and pick the girl. You always play the chick.
Only when playing with you. Mark makes kissy suck noises with his mouth. It sounds like he's sucking some guy off. Then Dee thought about that. Mark sucking some guy off. Instead of getting hard, he got unpredictable. Dee selected the thick brown jock to be Mark's counterpart. As a pair, they were the jock and the nerd.
We're cute.
Always were. Dee doesn't type it in, but thought it, felt it, and remembered when they were the jock and the nerd. The game started with a monologue from an old security guard who worked in the asylum before it was condemned.
They locked the patients in when they lost their license to practice. Better in than out.
This is garbage. Mark's smile was audible over Dee's headphones.
The gameplay is supposed to be really good in co-op. Some people have even said that they use real images of dead bodies for the background corpses.
Gross.
Cool.
The security guard droned on behind their chatter.
Town folks say if you go to the hospital at night, you can still hear the orderlies calling for bedtime, the patients shuffling to their rooms, and worst of all, old Dr. Harold standing in his window, waiting to swallow them all.
So that's Obbs the bad guy.
Don't spoil the ending for me.
When the game starts, Mark assigned his character the role of medic, leaving Dee to either be the juggernaut who blazed forward and took down the enemies with no hesitation, or the brainiac who read all the documents they uncovered and kept track of the clues.
What'll it be this time, big guy?
Don't call me that. I'll be the juggernaut.
Hot.
Mark was breathing heavy in Dee's ear. Beneath the blanket, Dee readjusts so that his controller isn't rubbing against the head of his...
You're my hero!
Mark feigned.
Do you promise to keep me safe from all the big, scary madmen?
Shut up.
Not until you promise to protect me.
The only answer Dee gave was bashing one of the on-screen crazed rats with a lead pipe. Mark's chuckle made Dee smile.
Let's see what we can find before starting the story.
Obvs. The game dropped them off right outside the doors to the asylum. Just like the old guard had said, there are eerie sounds and shadows in the windows. People calling out for help. When was this game made?
No one knows.
Mark said in a whisper. It looks like something from the 90s.
Yeah, the 1890s. Ooh!
That's what did it. What made Dee become fully erect. Hearing Mark's dumb joke. Hearing him laugh at himself. The look on his face as he did it seared through Dee's mind. A boner-sized comet.
Are you just going to stand there?
I'm thinking. Strategizing.
Well, get your mind out of the gutter and into the game. I need you.
After they scoured the outside of the building, noting the statues of doctors and locked doors that needed keys, they tried the front door. And it, too, was locked.
I saw a path around where the trash cans were. Want to check it out?
Sure.
You're quiet tonight.
I'm always quiet, remember? It's what you didn't like about me. Mark's sigh came through loud and clear. He was frustrated. At the trash cans, there was a path with a sign marker. Cemetery. Of course. Dee led them down the dirt path and away from the shelter of the asylum lights. There was a flashlight hanging from a tree that Mark's character grabbed. As he directed the player to shine it into Dee's eye, he said,
Wake up! We've got ghosts to hunt.
I hunt ghosts like you in my sleep.
I bet you do, Damon. I bet you do.
That was the first time Mark had said Dee's name since they broke up. If Dee had his mic on, Mark would be able to hear the sniffles, the sound of his sheets ruffling as he reached for the box of tissues on his nightstand. With the light from the flashlight and red arrow at the top of the screen as their guide, they moved deeper into the forest, their characters walking awkwardly beside each other.
Reminds me of when we first met,
Mark said. It's nothing like when we first met. There wasn't as much to lose. Who puts a graveyard out in the middle of these creepy-ass woods anyway?
A mad doctor trying to cover up his gruesome experiments?
Fair point. The only indication that they had entered the cemetery was a ghostly figure appearing from behind a tree.
You have made it to the cemetery, where the bones of the wronged lay scattered in the dirt.
That ghost looks like you. The ghost laughed. Mark laughed. They blended into one indistinguishable laugh.
I need your help.
It sounded like Mark's voice, but the lips that moved were the ghost in the game. It even sounds like you.
It is me,
the ghost said, stepping closer to the screen until its face took over the entirety of D's TV. It was Mark's face, a 90s pixelated version of his scruffy, handsome mug.
It's me, Damon.
Game, Mark said. What's going on?
This game is more than just an old scream. I did a test play earlier and died pretty quickly. But when I died in the game, I woke up inside the game. I don't know how I got here, but I need you to get me out.
This is crazy.
You're telling me I'm a fucking ghost in a game.
Does this mean you're dead?
It means I'm stuck in the game.
Mark's eyes shifted in the way they did whenever he got annoyed. But your body, is it dead?
I don't know. I hope not.
The game design doesn't allow for much expression, but Mark's voice quivered.
I need you to get me out of here. We can figure the rest out later.
What if we didn't? What if I didn't? Mark's computerized ghost stepped away from the screen. Behind him, the moss on the trees moved in the fake breeze running through the forest. There's a whole world for you in there.
It's not real, D. It's just a game. I can't live here.
You can if you have me. I can protect you. In the forest, shadows moved, and a man with a chainsaw came out gurgling angrily. Mark turned around.
Get out of here! If you're not going to help me, then leave! Don't land yourself here with me!
But that isn't what Dee wanted. He didn't want to be there with Mark dead in the game. He wanted Mark to stay there, waiting for him to come be his hero for eternity. Dee moved his character through Mark's ghost and charged the chainsaw ghoul. Equipped with nothing but a pulse and a pipe, Dee bashed the ghoul to a motionless shade in the dark. His corpse released its bounty, glowing around him. You can have those. I'm sure you'll need them.
Dee, you cannot leave me here.
Mark said, going up to Dee's character and collecting all the health and ammo the ghoul dropped. I'll be back. Tomorrow. We can talk more then.
And now, for our second and final story of the evening, we are sharing a small excerpt from the highly acclaimed play Ma Rainey's Black Bottom by the late, great, legendary American playwright, August Wilson. He has been referred to as the theater's poet of Black America and is best known for a series of 10 plays collectively known as the Pittsburgh Cycle, which shine a spotlight on the culture of the African-American community in the 20th century. These plays were and are groundbreaking, and the first of their kind to showcase Black Americans on stage surrounded by such universal themes, while simultaneously telling Black stories and having the scope to appeal to broader audiences. Wilson may have passed away in October of 2005, but his legacy endures. And now will reach your ears, here in the theater of the afterlife. After hearing this scene we have for you, we do hope that you will go out and read the entire play script, or perhaps watch the movie that is available streaming on Netflix, starring the late, great Chadwick Boseman and Viola Davis, who is a queen in her own right. The film was directed by an iconic director of both stage and screen, Mr. George C. Wolfe. So do yourself a favor and check it out. But before you do, allow me to present to you a scene from
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
And I don't want to be no white man. As soon as I get my band together and make them records like Mr. Sturdivander told me I can make, I'm gonna be like Ma and tell the white man just what he can do. Ma tell Mr. Irvin she gonna leave, and Mr. Irvin get down on his knees and beg her to stay. That's the way I'm gonna be. Make the white man respect me. The white man don't care nothing about Ma. The colored folks made Ma a star. White folks don't care nothing about who she is. What kind of music she make? That's the truth about that. You let her go down to one of them white folks' hotels and see how big she is. Hell, she ain't got to do that. She can't even get a cab up here in the north. I'm gonna tell you something. Reverend Gates. You know Reverend Gates? Slow Drag knows who I'm talking about, Reverend Gates. Now I'm gonna show you how this go, where the white man don't care a thing about who you is. Reverend Gates was coming from Tallahassee to Atlanta, going to see his sister, who was sick at the time with a consumption. The train come up through Thomasville, then past Moultrie, and stopped in this little town called Sigsbee. You can stop telling that right there. The train don't stop in Sigsbee. I know what train you're talking about. That train got four stops before it reached Macon to go to Atlanta, one in Thomasville, one in Moultrie, one in Cordell, and it stopped in Centerville. Nigga, I know what I'm talking about. You gonna tell me where the train stopped? Hell yeah, if you talking about it stopping Sigsbee, I'm gonna tell you the truth. I'm talking about this train. I don't know what train you've been riding. I'm talking about this train. Ain't but one train. Ain't but one train come out of Tallahassee heading north to Atlanta. And it don't stop at Sigsbee. Tell them, Toledo. That train don't stop at Sigsbee. The only train that stops at Sigsbee is the Yazoo Delta. And you have to transfer at Moultrie to get it. Well, hell, maybe that's what he done. I don't know. I'm just telling you the man got off the train at Sigsbee. All right, you telling it? Tell it your way. Just make up anything.
Levy, leave the man alone and let him finish.
Oh, I ain't paying Levy no never mind. Go on. Go on and tell it your way. Anyway, Reverend Gates got off this train in Sigsbee. The train done stopped there, and he figured he'd get off and check the schedule to be sure he arrives in time for somebody to pick him up. All right? While he's there checking the schedule, it come upon him that he had to go to the bathroom. Now, they ain't had no colored restrooms at the station. The only colored restroom is an outhouse they got sitting way back 200 yards or so from the station. All right? He in the outhouse, and the train go off and leave him there. He don't know nothing about this town. Ain't never been there before. In fact, ain't never even heard of it before. I heard of it. I know just where it's at. And he ain't got off no train coming out of Tallahassee in Sigsbee. The man standing there trying to figure out what he's gonna do. Where this train done left him in this strange town. It started getting dark. He see where the sun's getting low in the sky. And he's trying to figure out what he's gonna do. When he noticed a couple of white fellas standing across the street from the station, just standing there, watching him. And then, two or three more come up and join the others. He look around, ain't seen no colored folks nowhere. He didn't know what was getting in these here fellas' minds, so he commenced to walking. He ain't knowed where he was going. He just walking down the railroad tracks when he hear them calling.
Hey, nigga.
See, just like that.
Hey, nigga.
He kept on walking. They called him some more and he just keep walking. Just going down the tracks. And then he heard a gunshot. Where somebody done fired a gun in the air. He stopped then, you know. You don't even have to tell me no more. I know the facts of it. I done heard the same story 100 times before. It happened to me too. Same thing. Nah, I'm gonna show you the white folks don't care nothing about who or what you is. They crowded around him. These gang of men made a circle around him. Now he's standing there, you understand? Got his cross around his neck like them preachers wear. Had his little Bible with him, what he carry all the time. So they crowd on around him. and one of them asked who he is. He told them he was Reverend Gates, and that he was going to see his sister who was sick, and the train left without him. And they said,
"Yeah, nigger, but can you dance?"
He looked at them and commenced to dance. One of them reached up and tore his cross off his neck. Said he was committing a heresy by dancing with a cross and Bible. Took his Bible off and tore it up and had him dancing till they got tired of watching him.
White folks ain't never had no respect for the colored minister.
That's the only way he got out of there alive, was to dance. Ain't even had no respect for a man of God.
Want to make him into a clown?
Reverend Gates sat right in my house and told me that story from his own mouth.
So, the white folks don't care nothing about Ma Rainey.
She's just another nigga who they can use to make some money.